Hello, I'm Emily Booter, and you're listening to the No Film School podcast. When I first met Sophie Brooks, it was on day one of our year-long senior thesis course at NYU. I was struck by Brooks' particular blend of British wit and Los Angeles cheerfulness. One moment, she'd be deadpanning a caustic quip, and the next, she'd have something optimistic to say. Brooks' directorial debut, The Boy Downstairs, has her singular personality written all over it. The film, which Brooks both wrote and directed, premiered at this year's Tribeca Film Festival. It stars Zasha Mamet in her first starring role since Girls, as a 20-something aspiring writer named Diana, who returns to New York from a jaunt in Europe. When she lands an amazing apartment in Brooklyn's Fort Greene, which also happens to be the home of the No Film School offices, Diana's life seems back on track. But soon she discovers the identity of her downstairs neighbor. It's none other than her ex-boyfriend, with whom Diana had a messy and painful breakup right before she went off to Europe. What ensues is a dramedy of manners that sees Diana and her ex, played by a convincing and multi-layered Matthew Shear, bumble around as they try to find out whether they can or should be friends. Although The Boy Downstairs technically falls under the rom-com umbrella, Brooks manages to sidestep many of that genre's pitfalls. For one, the bittersweet story is laced with the kind of regret and disillusionment that normally belongs to strict dramas. But when it's funny, it's funny. At Tribeca, I sat down with Sophie and her producer, David Brooks, who also happens to be her brother. We had a wide-ranging conversation about their process, during which David was determined to prevent Sophie from making the same mistakes he did as a first-time director. Do you each want to introduce yourselves and say what your role was on the project?
Yeah, I'm Sophie Brooks, and I'm the writer and director.
I'm David Brooks, and I'm the producer, or one of the producers.
And it's not a coincidence that they have the same last name, because they're brother and sister.
It's true. Yes. Same mother, same father.
What a coincidence.
Yeah, it's crazy.
So at the premiere, Zasha said pretty distinctly that she was so impressed with your script and that that was really the selling point. She said actually that it was one of the best scripts she'd ever read. So I kind of want to start talking about the writing process and get into how long you developed that for and where the idea came from.
Yeah. So I came up with the idea when I was working on a short film, actually, my last short film that I made, Maple Leaves, and I got hit by a car as a pedestrian.
Oh, my God.
And then 10 days later, I got appendicitis. So I was, in the hospital getting surgery, but, also had a fractured knee and, bruises all over my body. I was on crutches.
That's really bad luck.
So it was very bad luck. And my parents were out of town, and my brother basically moved into my apartment to take care of me because I was incapacitated. And while I was recovering and had nothing to do but think, I came up with this idea of what if the only person who could take care of you if you got in an accident was an ex-boyfriend, and what would be the reason for that? And if they were neighbors, he witnessed something, he would obviously take you to the hospital. So that tiny scene turned out to be a tiny scene in the movie is kind of where the movie came from. I knew I wanted to do romantic comedy genre. It's my favorite genre. And I knew I wanted to explore a previous relationship and what exes kind of mean to people and how you revisit relationships. So the story kind of built around that. And then I wrote a really terrible draft and then took a break from it.
For how long?
I wrote a pretty bad draft in the summer of 2014, and then I probably took 2 months off and started writing it basically new again from scratch in September of 2014.
Yeah.
And then I spent 6 months writing it with a month off in December, so 5 months of writing, and then finished it March 1st, which was my deadline for myself that I made.
That never happened.
I know. I'm really type A. So I'll just do whatever I can to make deadlines. Although I haven't been able to do that again. I've been trying to write other things and I haven't made any deadlines. So maybe it was just a one-off. But, and then we shot fall of 2015. Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
That's a pretty quick turnaround.
Yeah, it was pretty quick.
So when you, from the first, which you say is terrible, first draft to the final script, which is really good, what kind of revision process happened?
That's a good question. I'm trying to remember. I think I showed the first, you know Arielle Rudnick.
Yes, a friend of ours from film school.
Yes, who's a very talented writer herself and now works on The Path. A Hulu show, shout out. She and I were meeting once a week, writing and showing each other our work. So there was a system in place with her, which was amazing, where I would show her some of my work and she would show me some of hers. And we would kind of be like, okay, here's what's working, here's what's not. By the time I finished the first draft, I think I only showed my brother and Arielle, I think. And David said, there's something here, there's something here, but like it's not there yet. But there's something.
Something like, yeah, it's not a movie yet. Yeah. Sounds like something I would say. Yeah,
that's a good producer line.
Well, yeah, exactly. That's a classic producer line. But yeah, I think that the, part of the. I mean, I knew that this was something that she was, because she's, you know, writing or had written or been thinking about ideas, some of which were just things she wanted to write. But I knew this was something that she wanted to direct. So I think, kind of brutal on material generally, but I think in particular with this, you know, I kind of, you know, as a brother, you know, this was before I was officially going to, you know, kind of produce the movie. So it was really more as a brother and a fellow, you know, filmmaker, just kind of, what do I think about this? And so for me, there was, I think, yeah, that from that first draft, it was, there's something here, but at the risk of being kind of brutal, I don't think it's yet, it's good enough yet to be your first movie, you know, but I think that there's something there and, you know, kind of, I probably gave you a few kind of bad notes, but, you know, try and rethink it. But I think that you really, the time off seemed to really help because, I mean, I thought that when I read, and there was still obviously a revisions process after that kind of second draft that you came back with however many months later, but it was just, It was a pretty night and day improvement, I think, and really, you know, when I read that next draft, I was like, okay, now this feels like a movie, you know, and I think this is could be really strong for you, and so now let's kind of, you know, think about what we can do to refine it from there. But it was a pretty quick, I think, from that not actually second draft, but whatever point, you know, I saw it, the new version of it was really kind of close to, I think, what the movie ended up being on kind of a macro level, and it was a pretty quick turnaround from that point, I think, to get it to a place where you felt comfortable to start, you know, sending it out to people.
Yeah. I think that the first bad draft was kind of me getting just like all of the really obvious things out of the way and it wasn't structured well. And, you know, I didn't learn how to write. I loved NYU, but I didn't learn how to write a feature at NYU. I actually didn't take a feature writing class at NYU. So I learned, I feel like I learned a lot about filmmaking and a lot from our professor Yamane, where we met, but not so much about like how to actually write a feature. So I read Story, mm-hmm. the book by
Robert McGee.
And I thought it was so helpful to just give me like an understanding of how to structure a screenplay. And I still like go back to it all the time for just like, wait, what is subplot again? What do I, what is a character? Yeah, so I use that a lot.
And it must have been difficult or at least challenging to deal with the flashback timelines, because there's two timelines in this film. There's the couple when they first met and then the couple after they've broken up and now live together as neighbors. So how did you orchestrate the structure around those flashbacks in a sense that it made it work?
Yeah, well, originally the flashbacks took place over the whole 2 years. And I think that was the first draft that was what the script ultimately was, had that. And it was a little confusing. So I think I made a decision right after like getting feedback of that that version of the movie that it just made more sense for it not to be, you know, flashing back, because like then we went to London with her, and we just, it was a little confusing in time and space. So I made a decision that it was just going to be her in New York when they were physically together at that time before that first breakup.
That's also better for production, I'm sure, too. You don't have to go to London.
Yes. Right. Very true.
Jumping away from the writing aspect of it, but in a way, in script format, flashbacks are really easy because you can say, you know, right. When you're flashing back. I think that the challenge comes more in post when you're sort of, you know, the film, I think, generally is a pretty subtle film in terms of, and I say that in the most, you know, positive, you know, that to me, that's a real positive of the
me
movie.
Too.
It's really not trying too hard. But that's something. And so I think initially the idea of constantly having, you know, sort of trying to indicate to the audience very clearly, oh, now we're in a flashback, felt, and even from prep, you know, the discussions of like, well, okay, well, what are they wearing? What's the hair? What are the, you know, and so I think you decided, which was great, on, you know, with Matt just to use the glasses and him not wearing glasses.
And Zasha has extensions in the flashback, so she has longer hair in the flashbacks. So it was very subtle things to indicate it. I knew that I never wanted to have a different like color scheme or something, you know, like different color correction in the past tense. That felt like very heavy handed for this movie. So it was always like, let's be really subtle. Let's hope the audience figures it out. And, you know, we have a card at the beginning that says 4 years earlier. So I hope people catch on. But it was definitely a concern.
Well, and it was definitely a discussion in post. I mean, you know, we tested the film. I'm a huge believer in testing. I think you have to get movies in front of an audience, which I think is a challenge for a lot of indie movies in particular, because it's just not sort of part of the kind of way the movies are made. I think there's a perception that, you know, movies are just made by, you know, at least in post, by the director and the editor sitting alone in a room, and they come out however many months later and it's perfect.
Yeah.
But anyone on any, you know, any filmmaker, I think, would attest to the, if you believe in this part of the process, but, you know, we did friends and family screenings that were, you know, from 15 to maybe 30, 40 people. And then from there, we ended up doing a couple of sort of bigger recruited test screenings, which are just so helpful, particularly for things like the flashback. So we could try out a couple of different things. And that's why I think we ended up landing on just having that one 4 years later at the beginning, just to say to the audience, okay, yeah, we're going to be doing this, FYI. And we felt that after that, and the feedback that we got, yeah, the feedback.
The people figure it out after that.
Well, part of, as an audience member, part of the fun for me was that at the beginning, you're trying to orient yourself a little bit. So it requires some participation. Yeah. And that's what I want from a movie. You know, I don't want to be handed things in my lap. You know, I want to be asked to participate in the movie. So it worked really well on all those subtle levels.
Good. Yeah, I agree. And I think audiences are really smart and like, everyone figures it out. And I also think that's part of the fun. It's like, then I hope the next time, if people see it again, if people see it a second time, then there are things they notice, because like, oh, now I know exactly like that this is a flashback and what this is coming before. So it gives you a little like a different experience the second viewing, maybe.
Going back to the test screening, because I do think that all films should be put in front of an audience. Like you said, were you able to anticipate some of the notes that you got? Did people pick up on what you thought the film's question marks were? Or were you surprised by some of the notes? And how did you incorporate those into your edit?
So testing's really, it's always really interesting. And always on every movie, I find it's a different thing. I think certain aspects you obviously have a position on. And oftentimes the filmmaker, you know, the editor will have a different, you know, opinion on something to the director, and the producer will have a separate opinion. And so it's always part of the discovery process is, you know, there's always a discovery process there. But I think it kind of works on two levels. One of them is just affirmation. Mm-hmm. So you're sitting in a room and you're laughing at things and you think it's funny and you think the pacing in a scene works. And then you get in front of an audience and there's that pleasant, like, oh good, they're laughing here. That joke works. Right. But but other aspects are bigger and they are not as kind of clear cut. And I think that, you know, it was interesting because there's also a question of kind of the core audience in a way versus what is a larger audience. And so I think what we experienced was in our early kind of friends and families, which were obviously, you know, the first one was largely, you know, kind of Sophie's, you know, a lot of Sophie's friends and some of mine and some of Dan's, my producing partner, you know, so sort of a pretty home crowd, as it were, you know, and also people in our age group. And in a way, even though the movie, you know, had, you know, some pacing issues and all of the things that you'd expect from a first screening, it played actually really well. And we were sort of really like, okay, well, a lot of those jokes work. That's great. And then the second screening we did, or perhaps it was the third, but it was kind of interesting because I think it was the third, actually. It was our first recruited screening. And it's kind of funny. It's actually difficult to get, even when you're paying for a recruited audience, to get kind of that core. Typically, you want to get, let's say, a 70% of what your core audience would be anyway in one of those screenings, and the rest you want of kind of a general audience. We had a really hard time getting that core audience because at the end of the day, a lot of people who go to see indie movies in theaters tend to be an older crowd. And so with that recruited audience, we were sort of disappointed when we showed up at the test and we're kind of like, where are all the young people?
Yeah, or there were like, we had a Q&A after with only like, what, 20 people, but like four of those 20 people were 17-year-old boys. And I was like, that's not my audience. 17-year-old boys is not my audience. So they were like, we didn't like it. And I was like, yeah, that makes sense. You should not like this movie.
Well,
this is
no,
not for you.
I think, though, that what it did ultimately reveal, though, was it brought to attention some things that, yeah, maybe the core audience wouldn't find as much of an issue. But we sort of had to look at it. Well, okay, but are these things still potentially, you know, issues that we need to address? And ultimately, I think we decided to, and they were much more sort of, you know, a couple of kind of core, more character-based things that really with subtle tweaks we're able to shift. And I think ultimately made for a much, you know, a much better film. But so that was, yeah, does that kind of answer the
yeah.
experience of it? It really.
Were the notes were about character likability or understanding motivations or things like that?
Well, I think that there are some things that as the filmmakers, we just, and I think about this actually with writing as well. Like when I was writing the first draft that I wrote of the script, I remember, I don't know if it was Ariel or someone else saying to me like, I don't really know what she's feeling in this moment. And to me, it was like, what do you mean? It's so obvious. But it was so obvious because I felt it and it was in my head. So I think that there are things like that in the editing as well, where to you, an aspect of a relationship or a specific scene or a dynamic between two people is so obvious because you know them as people and you were on set and you know what your intention was. So there were a couple things with, yeah, just like a couple relationship beats and scenes that, like, I think to us we all felt were clear, and then to a wider audience maybe were not. And it was really helpful to have that perspective and be like, oh, okay, so like my intention in this scene is not getting across, but if we try it this way, hopefully it will be.
Yeah, and it's kind of amazing how really subtle tweaks can shift scenes and even characters in a way, you know, just sort of, yeah, how you perceived, you know, certain, you know, how I think we perceive certain scenes in terms of kind of who, you know, whose perspective the scene was really coming from, or were we equally showing the same perspective or whatever it might have been, and getting feedback from the audience that maybe wasn't our core saying, hang on, I really don't know where this character is grounded in this important scene or whatever it was. And then going back to the footage and realizing, oh, okay, wow. Well, even though we thought it was clear, well, let's use this look or this line that we decided to cut, whatever it might be, to help clarify and to help give that perspective so that, you know, we can ground the audience in both of them in whatever moment it was.
Yeah, just specifically like the scene, we did a few different versions of the breakup scene. That was a hard scene to get right because...
Spoiler
alert, it's about exes. They break up. Yeah, that was definitely a scene where we tried a few different versions and showed audiences a few different versions to see what if there was a unanimous thing, and of course there never is a unanimous decision, but like what people, how people responded and how we felt about it. And I think in terms of perspective, character perspective in a scene, same thing with the, there's a scene in the movie with Arliss Howard, who plays her dad, where Ben and Diana go to a restaurant with her dad. And we tried a bunch of different versions of that scene to just get, the perspective right of the characters.
The other thing I think is that you're kind of always fighting it to some degree is what we, you know, talk about as home movie funny. But home movie funny isn't just home movie funny. It can be home movie. You know, we just, you know, you, well, particularly with this experience, because it was such a great experience, you know. You know, I think for Sophie, it's like you're sitting in there in the edit and you're like, you love Matt and you love Zasha. And so there's to some degree looking at them as characters, but also what you see, you know, there are things that, mannerisms and just things that we found so endearing and or so hilarious or whatever it was. And because, you know, there was a fair amount of improv done on set. That's the other thing, you're deciding between, you know, certain improv lines that for us were just like falling over ourselves so funny, but then we realize like oh, actually it's right. It becomes a little bit of an inside joke. And actually sometimes maybe that scripted line for the audience is funnier or just a different version of whatever the improv line was. So yeah, it's a lot of discovery.
So can you tell me a little bit about the process of improv that you used? Because you were rewriting a little bit on set, right? And yeah. You opened the doors to improv. So mm-hmm. How did all of those different elements work together?
We did. I mean, I was totally open. They probably did versions of improv in every scene. But there were certain scenes where we didn't change day of and we just shot the script first and then would start playing around. And then there were other scenes where we would get there and do it once and be like, ooh, this isn't quite working. Let's try something different. And the three of us would really just like sit down for like 45 minutes and I would let them improv and I would just be like frantically taking notes. And then like the Italian restaurant scene, that was very much improvised and we figured out something that we liked and then I wrote everything down and we did that version basically. What happens in the scene wasn't improvised and there were certain lines that we stuck to, but I certainly let them like lead the way with what they wanted to say. So I think it depended on the scene, but they're so funny and such good actors. So it's so fun to play around with them. And but yeah, the thing with improv is you can get carried away sometimes and you have to reel it in. So I think it was helpful for all of us to kind of like do the improv not filmed first and figure out what we wanted to do and then land on something and do coverage of whatever we had landed on.
I also think that, you know, Sophie created kind of a, with Matt and Zasha, just an environment on set whereby they was just so invested and in their roles and in the movie and in working with Sophie that it was she created this very kind of open environment, but also one where I think she had such a clear vision of what she wanted that when she sort of wanted to bring it in, you know, I think everyone was really responsive to her kind of honing in on what she really wanted, you know? And so it really ended up being a pretty seamless, you know, kind of, maybe not seamless is the right word, but I think for you guys, an enjoyable kind of process. I was drinking a lot of coffee while these little sessions were happening.
It sounds like it was a lot of improv as problem solving. Like you would would walk into an emotional moment that maybe wasn't hitting and then you were trying to reconfigure it.
Totally. Yeah. It was a lot of that. It was a lot of like, once I started working with them, and they had such great chemistry and we as a trio had such great chemistry that there was just an opportunity to like explore things deeper without having to stick stringently to the script. Which by the way, I was actually really surprised at that I was comfortable with that because I'm such a like type A person that I like to like know exactly what's happening. But I mean, I think shout out to my producers did such a good job of like making me feel like I was in like, I think I made my actors feel safe and they made me feel safe. So
that's the way it's supposed to work.
Yeah. well done everyone.
Yeah.
So I think I felt like, okay, I never felt and my AD was great. I never felt like a manic time pressure. I'm already the type of person that is going to be like, okay, we have this much time to do it. We have to do it. You know, I'm very much like on my own butt. So having them be like, it's okay. Like, take a minute, figure it out. We don't need to like, was really helpful to figure stuff out with the actors.
How did you guys plan out your shooting schedule in pre-production?
You mean like with the flashbacks or?
With everything.
Yeah. We just did it based on location really, mainly, right?
Yeah, I mean, I think that when you're making a small movie in New York, there are just realities to how that happens. So, just time and money, like every movie.
Yeah.
But yeah, so it was, and really locations. So we knew that because, you know, about half of our shoot took place in this, in our main kind of brownstone location in Fort Greene. It was kind of, okay, well, that's a block. And then everything else, we were sort of, you know, jumping around various locations in the city. So, you sort of want to shoot things as chronologically as possible or as in a certain kind of order. And I think we, you know, Nick already did a great job at, doing as much of that as we could.
We also had, the movie is set over a year. So it's set over four seasons, but we shot it in 21 days in the fall in New York City. So we also had this thing of like, okay, we need New York to look like it's summer and it's not summer. So there were certain things like Nick, our AD, would schedule certain things where we knew the girls were going to be wearing less clothing earlier on the shoot, just so it would be a little less cold. And in the movie, the Halloween scene, there's a scene on a rooftop and it's supposed to be Halloween. And it was so cold that night. It was freezing. It was the week before Halloween, but it was like really cold, like 25 degrees or something. And it wasn't supposed to be in the script that cold, but it just like turned out to be. Weather happens and things happen and they end up being in the script. Like the line that Zasha says of it's freezing, who is a rooftop party in October, was because it was freezing. And we were like, why did we decide to do this? It's so cold.
It's funny because I have been in that situation before, so it's very relatable.
Yeah. Yeah. And it also affected, like, we had to be strategic with some of our wide shots because, you know, it was supposed to be spring, but we can't control the fact that all of the leaves in the background are a certain color. So it affected us a little bit, but.
Just in terms of, you know, the process with the improv, I think that, Stefan, your DP, Stefan Weinberger, who just did a great job on the movie. And I think part of the other great thing was that the two of you had a great, understanding and kind of creative chemistry and all the rest of it as well. So, because, you know, it was a little challenging in the sense that we would sort of block a scene, but the blocking in a way became that sort of rehearsal, rewrite process. Yeah. So inevitably there would be, and you guys obviously had a shot list and a sense of what you wanted to do, but there was definitely this kind of point where they would spend the time really now figuring out, okay, well, what is the scene and, you know, whatever changes that would come out of it. And I think Stefan did a great job at adjusting very quickly because the actors by the end of that process were at a point where it's like, okay, they're ready to shoot the scene. And he did a great job at just, you know, moving quickly to and working with Sophie to figure out, okay, now what are our shots and getting us lit in time to be so that there wasn't then suddenly okay, now we really know what we're going to shoot, but we got to wait an hour and a half and have that lull and the actors lose that energy. There was a real sense of keeping things moving. And so that was a big part of the process as well.
As the improv started coalescing into your process, did you have to kind of rearrange your days around allowing extra time, or did it fit kind of seamlessly into the schedule?
Yeah, we didn't. We like did not go over on days. I think we went over like once, maybe one time in the hospital. I think if our key grip and gaffer hadn't been so incredible at lighting so quickly, we would have had more issues, but they were so quick that it made up for us changing our minds with dialogue and stuff like that.
The first few days, you kind of figure out what the rhythm of the set is. And again, I think the crew figured out what the rhythm was and were able to work with it. And the other thing is that even though that kind of blocking rehearsal process, whatever you want to call it, took a little bit longer, I think it led to where Sophie wasn't doing 15 takes of anything. Mm-hmm. It was more like 3 to 6 max takes. Because again, the actors were just kind of there, ready to go, and they're both so good that it, you know,
yeah, we did not.
We just didn't do a lot of takes. So it once sort of we got that, you know, once the scenes came together and we started shooting, it was a reasonably kind of, you know, efficient process.
It sounds like you really kept it in the family, literally and figuratively, in this sense, for this film. So how do you think casting and getting, I don't know if the crew members were also friends to some extent, but how do you think putting together a team of people that you knew and loved already impacted the film itself?
Yeah, well, I had worked with Stefan, my DP, already, so we already had a friendship and working relationship. It's my first feature, so I don't know what it's like not doing that, but it was so lovely. It really felt like a family on set. Like the whole, we were also really specific about the other people we brought on board who we didn't know, but when we were interviewing, like Carrie, our costume designer, was so lovely. She was also 8 months pregnant when we were filming.
Wow, that's badass.
So it was so cool. So it felt like we were a family birthing her baby. Just kidding. She did it by herself. It's incredible.
Meredith, we knew.
Our production designer, we met through my brother's friend, Ben. They had worked together, and she's lovely. And everyone who we brought on board, it's really important to me that that I'm working with are nice. I don't think it's worth it to me if they're super talented but assholes. So we made sure that we had nice people, and we did. We had so many nice people. It was so wonderful, and it really did feel like a family. And it was, right? Wasn't it the best? It was so nice.
No, completely. And I mean, a lot of credit to that goes to, you know, my producing partner Dan, who just did a great job. I think at, we ironically, because Dan and I met at film school, but we hadn't, both together and separately, you know, done a bunch of different projects. I mean, Dan, before, you know, had just shot a movie in Colombia and you know, kind of all over the place. And it was ironic because since film school, we hadn't done anything in New York. So we hadn't actually made any movie in New York. But Dan just did a great job at kind of putting together the pieces and finding kind of digging to find kind of who were the people who could be really effective, but also would work within the kind of, mm-hmm. within, the vibe that Sophie wanted to.
Loving.
The loving vibe.
I like that. That's the way it should be.
Well, yeah, you know, I think there's different people have different ways that they like to work. And obviously some people like tension and all of that.
Chaos.
And that's definitely not how I like to work. Fortunately, it's not how Sophie likes to work.
All about those good vibes.
Good vibes, yeah. And just people being adults, you know, is always nice too. So, which is not common, not all the time in this industry. So, So I think it was hugely helpful ultimately with, you know, once you actually get to making the movie.
I also think when, like, you get along with the people you're working with and they like you and you like them, there is a motivation to do a better job, you know?
Because you want them to be happy.
Yeah, exactly. And so I think it having people who you like and who like you, I think it's helpful creatively to the final product.
Yeah, it kind of bolsters the whole experience a little bit.
Yeah, I think it makes people care more.
So David, you're a filmmaker in your own right, and you went to film school, and at the film's premiere, you said something really interesting, that you were helping Sophie kind of circumvent the mistakes that you made on your first feature. And what struck me about this film is it absolutely does not feel like a first feature. And I heard that from people that didn't know you and had just seen it for the first time. So there aren't those cringeworthy amateur mistakes, you know, where you look back on it and wish you could change. It looks like a confident, really solid piece of work. So what were the kind of mistakes that you were helping her circumvent?
Well, I guess I should clarify that ultimately what I kind of learned on the process I went through on my first feature as a director was just, I felt like when I being very candid, I felt like when I, by the time I finished making the movie, I was 700 million times the filmmaker I was when I started. And I kind of ended up with a movie that, while I was, you know, happy with it, was not, I don't think, representative of who I was as a filmmaker by the time I finished it. And so that was what, you know, I really wanted Sophie to end up with a movie that she was just completely proud of and felt like it was the best version of the movie. So with that said, you know, I think that it's, you know, my role was, it's very sort of subtle and at the fringes. I think a lot of those kind of, not mistakes, but just things that maybe you don't think about in certain moments just happen in the context of, you know, it's your first time doing it. I mean, even I would say just watching Sophie, and even, Stefan as well. I mean, I felt like after that first week, you guys together, just in terms of really owning the process and the set, it was like, I could see that growth in that first week. You know what I mean? And so it was, I think there were multiple points where I just wanted to, I guess, be there. It's really just about being there as a support system and being able to bounce ideas off, because I think otherwise you end up sort of a bit as a director sometimes feeling like you're on a bit of an island and you have to always be the one who knows exactly what, you know, needs to be done at every single moment. And I think just having a support system or someone who you trust creatively, who you can bounce ideas off or whatever it might be, is helpful in that process.
Yeah, I think that what was most helpful having Dave, I mean, I'm sure there are things, and I've said this before in reference to what I've learned, but I'm sure there are things that Dave has done that have helped that, like, I'll be aware of, like, when I make my next movie that I'm not even appreciative of yet because I don't realize. But I think something that was really helpful in retrospect was him making me try things that maybe were a little out of my comfort zone at times. Or I think that there is this stubbornness when it's your first time making it. And, you know, you want to know everything and you want to know how to do it. And you want to be like, no, I know how to do it. I can do it by myself.
And then especially when it's your brother.
Exactly. Especially when it's your big brother. But something he said a lot to me on set was, I just want you to have options. So he would suggest something, and if my first reaction was like, no, I don't think we need that. And he would say, okay, if you don't want to do it, don't do it. But I just want you to have options. I just want you to have options in the edit so that, you know, you don't get there and feel like you're missing something. And that was really helpful. And also, you know, made me be like, okay, I don't have to know everything. I can go to him and I can go to my other producer and I can go to my DP and be like, guys, help me out here. What's working, what isn't? So in those moments of self-doubt or confusion, having him be like, let's just like have options, was really helpful. And something that I resisted at first because I wanted to just know how to do it all. But you don't, and that's okay.
And that's why you have a crew.
Exactly. That's why you have a crew.
Yeah, I mean, options in the edit is just a huge thing always. And it goes along with that sort of thing of, on the one hand, yeah, you want to have a super clear vision. But on the other hand, there are, again, always just, I keep reusing this word, but just discoveries to be made, both on set and then certainly in post. And so it's just, you just want to cover yourself. And I think in a couple of moments, also just kind of wanting to just sometimes just to be there to say, you know, is this the best version of this? Do you think that you're getting exactly what you want? Because I think there is also, even though, as we said earlier, you know, we were under time pressure, as you are in any small movie. And sometimes you can't help but feel like, not that you're being rushed, but feel like that you have to get this and we have to move on. And sometimes, you know, just being able, just saying, you know, take 5 minutes, think about this, make sure, you know, we'll wait, it's fine. You know, just to think about, did you get this exactly how you want it? Or is there some other, you know, can we just so it's not sort of pushing, but it's just making sure that you have what you want.
It's like a little quality control when you get like, it's true. It's like, you know, and I, as I said, I was always very aware of time. So in moments where I was like, okay, yeah, I think we got it. I think. And then to have David just be like, if you're not sure, do it again.
Yeah. You're like, not going to get this moment back.
Yeah. Just do it again. If you're not sure, if you're sure, great, let's move on. And if you're not, do it again. And just having someone to be like, it's okay, we can go 5 minutes over, it's not the end of the world, was really helpful.
Honestly, I think talking to a lot of first-time directors, that is, or first-time feature directors, because you've done shorts, that is the biggest challenge, being able to know when you have it and when you're ready to move on, versus feeling like you need to stick to your schedule and keep everyone happy all the time, like just by, you know, staying within the confines of what was pre-planned. So it's great that you were able to kind of conform to those instincts.
The other side of it is just in post, again, just having, because, and Matt Freeman, our editor, was just fantastic. But again, that, you know, I cut my first movie myself, basically in my apartment, so my first feature. So, but I think even when you're working with a great editor like Matt, there is still an element of, you go from a set and you've got 50 people, you know, working with you, and then suddenly you're in a room, it's just you and your editor. And, you know, you guys work through and get a sense of the movie. But at a certain point, you know, we talked about testing earlier, but also just, I think, you know, Dan and I were able to, in certain moments, just, you know, come in and provide other, you know, other opinions or other thoughts to kind of how the movie was shaping up.
I'm so grateful to have had Dave on there. And in retrospect, I'm even more grateful. But at the time, we definitely had moments of tension. You know, it's not all, it wasn't all smooth sailing. There were certainly moments where I was like, no, I can do it, you know? And he was like, okay, cool. But like, just take a minute. And I also think that's part of like the learning process of making your first feature, is like being okay with asking for help and asking for advice, right?
Yeah, I mean, I think that's also we're very close.
Yeah.
So there's challenges that go with that. And there's definitely, I feel like production, we worked through the kind of like producer/brother, you know, sister, director, brother, sister dynamic and found by the, you know, by the end of really a kind of, I think, an effective working way. And then but we sort of had to rediscover that in post to some degree. Again, for me, because I think the challenge is everyone come, you know, when you're working with creative people, everyone is always going to have their own perspective. And so it's really important as a producer, I think, to always remember that the director knows the movie better than anyone. And it really is, even as if you think you're smart, and I think I'm relatively smart, but, you know, the director just knows the movie, and Sophie knew what the movie she wanted to make. And so ultimately, I think it was, as much as anything, just, you know, again, me trying to just encourage her to make the movie that she wanted to make. And she was really strong and firm and knew what she wanted, and was also willing to listen to collaboration. And again, Matt, I think, was so great in that process, and kind of showing you different, sometimes just seeing options, you know, just saying, hey, we could play this scene this way. What do you think? And then oftentimes a bad idea from a producer or director, whoever, a producer or an editor or whoever it is, or a good idea, leads to a much better idea from the director. Because again, the director kind of takes that and knows, okay, yeah, but I really know what this scene is about, so here's what we should do.
It's almost like you kind of have this preconceived notion of the way everything should be, and then suddenly when someone introduces a new element, it like cracks open all of the other possibilities, and you're able to more clearly synthesize everything.
Yeah, I think that's true. And that's in every aspect, that's a big part of, you know, improv and what we did in rehearsals on the day, is that there was a version of it you have in your mind, or, you know, a version Zasha has in her mind, a version Matt has in his mind, a version I have in my mind. And then we play it and we're like, okay, like this is working, or like, okay, I think this can be better. Let's like play around with this. And then all of a sudden you end up somewhere so much better than what the sides were this morning. And that's really like exciting and exhilarating and scary, but ultimately rewarding.
if you had any advice for first-time directors, both of you can speak to this because you've both been first-time directors. What would you say you learned from this film that you might not have anticipated as a piece of advice you might give before?
First of all, a shitload. But firstly, I would say that if you really have, as a director, if you really have a conviction, even if the people around, there was one scene that I will say that David and Dan didn't think we needed in the movie, didn't want to shoot it. It was a scene where they're driving upstate, and they were like, I don't know, it's just not really doing that much, and I don't see what it's giving us. And I just knew in my gut that I wanted that scene. And they said to me, they were like, okay, well, here are the restrictions with budget and location and stuff. So like, what do you want to do? And we ended up cutting like a whole storyline where Diana changes jobs and moves into an office job because I wanted to keep that scene.
That eighth of a page.
It was nothing, but to me it's so important, and I love that scene in the movie, and I'm so glad that I fought for it. So I think even if your collaborators don't agree with you, and I think ultimately you guys loved the scene and you're glad we shot it, right?
You 100%. I mean, that was 100% the right decision. I think it really speaks to what I was just saying in terms of the director does know the movie better than anyone. So we're looking at that going, man, this is crushing our schedule. It's an eighth of a page. To us, it feels like the kind of thing that never makes the edit, blah, blah, blah. And all of those sort of things that kind of can make sense. But ultimately, she knew the movie better. She knew how important that was. And I completely agree.
So yeah, I think just knowing that, like, it being reasonable, I mean, like, okay, I understand that we can't afford to do like that and also this, but I would rather get rid of this entire storyline at an office and keep this scene, and trust me, it is important. And they did. And so I think that was one of my biggest lessons, is just knowing that, like, if there's something deep down I really believe is important, even if the people around me don't agree with me, I can be right. I need to follow that.
Well, it's also kind of funny because that scene specifically, which is really one shot, and it, in terms of shooting it, ended up being the complete shit show that we thought it would be. I mean, we literally, it was like the sun's going down. We didn't have enough time for this.
We
didn't have time for this. And it kind of ended up being a magic shot. You know, it kind of was like, I think we got one or two takes and one of them one of them was just really magical. And so again, that's a great, example of that. So yeah, I would just reiterate that it's just really important to make sure that you, as a filmmaker, are being true to who you are and not trying to kind of be something that you think is the perception of what a director is or should be at any moment, and just try and, be your own kind, because it takes all kinds. There are many different approaches, many different ways to make a movie, but yeah, so that sounds kind of trite, but be yourself. Yeah. But no, but yeah, I think being true to yourself as a filmmaker is always really, really important. It's easy to get lost in the chaos of making a movie.
Well, what's so interesting to me hearing that scene was almost cut is that it's an example of a time when the story rules don't really apply or don't work in service of the movie. Like, the producers are looking at it being like, this doesn't move the story forward. The characters don't change, in the timeline, this doesn't fit, blah, blah, blah. But what was great about it was that it gave us a chance to just be with the couple before, because they're together a lot in low-key moments in the present tense, but in the flashbacks, it's usually motivated by a specific important event. And that was a moment where we kind of just got to see their chemistry as they were together in the past. So I see that as an important scene, but I can see why you didn't at the time,
Yeah, I agree.
Well, thanks. Thank you guys so much for being on the podcast today.
Thanks for having us. This was very fun.
Thank you.
Do you know anything about when people will be able to see this movie, or no?
We know nothing, but
we're hoping.
Hopefully we'll know more soon. Yeah. And,
Stay tuned.
We're on Google, so you can Google the movie. Thank you for having us, and hopefully people can see it soon.
Great, wonderful. Good luck.
Thanks.
Thanks
for listening to the No Film School podcast. You can rate us or subscribe on iTunes or your preferred podcast platform.